Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue. It's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. That's for talk and text as well. Later on, we're going to be talking about how well did you do in school? Were you a good student? And I have some stories about celebrities who were very successful despite the fact that they were awful students. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. Again, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And it is Thursday, and every couple of weeks we talk with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We talk to him biweekly about TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And lots and lots of TV stuff to talk about for this week. And so let's bring Dan Feinberg into the fold. Hey, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
I'm well. A little bit tired, but doing well.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot to talk about because you've been talking about trailers for the networks for the upcoming season. And, of course, there's been a bloodbath of cancellations that we have to get to. But I just want to talk about the ending of a couple of shows for their seasons. How did you feel about the last couple of episodes of Atlanta to close out the season?
I thought it ended very, very strong. I thought that the last episode was another one, the first episode since Teddy Perkins that I had to watch consecutive times because there were several plot points that actually, I have to admit, kind of confused me a little. Not to spoil too much for the other listeners who haven't gotten to it yet, but a lot of the stuff that happened in the airport at the end of the episode, I had to watch two or three times to figure out what actually happened.
Yeah.
But without any sort of annoyance at that, it's just like, okay, the little tiny details I apparently missed and I had to keep going back. But I really enjoyed it. It was a good, strong, fitting close to the season, kind of the last few episodes, bringing the characters back together after having separated them for so long.
Yeah.
and seeing them back together in their kind of precarious positions. I thought it went really well.
Yeah, I loved it. And I mean, obviously, I loved it. I just think it's the best thing on TV. And I love the fact that they went back to the couch. That made me happy. But no, it was spectacular. A great season, even better than the first season. And I think this every episode this season was terrific. And obviously, Teddy Perkins is the episode that's a standout among great episodes for season two. And have they renewed it for season three?
It's one of those things where if it
WGN
were nearly renewing it,
yeah,
they would. But it's a situation where you may know that Donald Glover's a little bit busy, and
yeah,
so I think it's as simple as that. I think it's as simple as they probably told him at some point, when you're ready for a season three, we'll do it. We can announce it whenever you want to. We can just keep the door open and you can slide in whenever you want to. I think it's going to be that kind of deal.
Sure.
I would not expect to see it in, 2019 probably. I would assume he will find other things to do next year, but seeing it in 2020 seems, I would say, hopeful. I have no information, but it's just knowing how busy he is with everything.
Right. What a year he's having. I mean, really, just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
He's obviously an incredibly talented man, and yes, so he's, I think he can expect many, many Emmy nominations. I think probably he's lined himself up for more Grammy nominations. Probably based on what I've heard about Solo, he's not going to be nominated for an Oscar, but maybe I'll be wrong about that. Maybe.
Right. Well, anyway, great season of Atlanta, and Barry ended last week and on such a high note. It got real dark. I mean, it was dark from the beginning, but the last two episodes were, my God. And I got to say that if they're submitting an episode for Emmy consideration, especially for Hader, it's got to be episode seven. It's got to be episode seven.
That's the penultimate, right?
Yeah. 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 He was unbelievable in that episode. I mean, unbelievable. But yeah, I loved Barry. I thought it was a great first season, and I can't wait to see what they do with it next.
I thought that the penultimate episode was significantly better than the finale, which is not necessarily such an awful thing because in this sort of golden age peak TV era, that's the way a lot of shows, especially on cable, have started working, is that the penultimate episode is where they put sort of all the heft, and then the finale is when things unspool and unwind, and the season kind of flows to its conclusion. I thought that the penultimate episode was fantastic and easily the best episode of that show.
I agree.
Its entire season. Yeah. I liked the finale. I've heard some people say that they would have been perfectly satisfied if it had ended after 8 episodes, and I think I may agree with that. I don't necessarily know how you pick the storyline up and what you're supposed to do with it in the second season. I don't have an instant sense of what season 2 looks like, but I assume that Bill Hader and Alec Burke must have pitched something because it was renewed. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was great. And if it, you know, because I mean, it has a very satisfactory punchline at the end for episode 8. Like the line that Hader has and they cut to the credits, I laughed out loud. And still squirmed, and again, I agree with your colleagues who say that they would be fine if it was just these 8 episodes told the whole story, because it's a complete story. There's no question about it.
But yes, very, very, very good show, and I have to believe they will be able to get him a lead actor in a comedy Emmy nomination with any luck.
So yeah, I mean, just all they have to, all they have to do is watch episode 7. That's all you got to do. It's that simple. Just watch the penultimate episode and give the guy a nomination, because it's
But the sheer number of things with which one would say that when it comes to Emmy voters, that apparently Emmy voters were unable to watch that one episode or any episodes of things, it's always much too high. Yeah. I agree though. I don't think it's an inaccessible show. I think HBO knows how to pitch shows for Emmy consideration. So it would be a miss if somehow they got nominations for something like the current season of Silicon Valley, which I thought was a pretty big mess. And if they couldn't get recognition for Barry, that would be a disappointment.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, I want to get to all the cancellations, but I think the story that a lot of us are very, very happy about, and it was a very dramatic 30 hours for the cast and crew of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and the fans of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, of which I am one huge fan of that show. It was canceled by Fox, and then everybody thought it was dead, and then 30 hours later, NBC picked it up. How often does that happen, especially in that kind of time frame? That doesn't happen very often, does it?
In that time frame, no, virtually unprecedented. I think there were a day or two last year between when NBC canceled Timeless and picked Timeless back up again. But again, that's the same network doing it, so that's just a network saying, "Okay, look, we realized we probably made a mistake. Whatever." This was not that. This was really shocking because I don't think any of us knew what Fox was going to be doing at all, because Fox is in this strange position of flux with the Disney deal coming in, and what Fox looks like 18 months from now is going to be completely different from the Fox that we've grown to love in recent years.
Right.
And so this was kind of the start of that. So Fox canceled Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they canceled Last Man on Earth, they canceled The Mick, so a bunch of shows that we talk about regularly, and they all got the axe. But the one that obviously made the most people unhappy was Brooklyn. And I'm always kind of tentative when shows get canceled and immediately fans go into the, oh, let's get it picked up by dot, 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 or dot, 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 because it's just not, it doesn't happen that often. And so it's kind of a false expectations for fans. But in the case of this show, it made a lot of sense. It's an NBC Universal production, so there was no skin in the game, basically, for Fox to keep it around. And
right.
That's a big part of why it was canceled. And
right.
So therefore you go, okay, well, there's a logical home for it. NBC is a logical home. Hulu was a logical home. TBS, where they have off-network syndication, it was a logical home. So I really did think, after Brooklyn was canceled, that it was going to find somewhere else. I just thought it might take 4 or 5 days, a week. Who knows? Instead, the next night.
It was funny because I just last night, Terry Crews was on The Daily Show. And I did not know that he's in Deadpool 2. I didn't even know that, and I guess they kept it a secret for a while. And I'm watching, and he says, "Hey, star of Deadpool 2," and I'm like, "What?" But Terry Crews talked about what a roller coaster it was. Like, he was doing like a bunch of press, and he got a text saying that Fox canceled Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and he had to put on a happy face, you know, and talk to these, you know, talk to, he was doing the talk show circuit to plug Deadpool. He talks about how he was just completely distracted and his phone was lighting up and everybody was really sad. He said it was like your favorite uncle had died. And then we didn't know what we were going to do. Everybody was really sad. And then 30 hours later, NBC picks us up, and it was like my uncle that I love came back from the grave, and he described what it was like for everybody involved in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And as you said, it's unprecedented that it got picked up that quickly. But you know, people really, you know, and if anything, this incident, Dan, proved how much people love that show. People love that show. They have a very they really do love it. Maybe not a ton of people watch it, but the people who watch it love it.
It did. I kind of wonder if Fox's response to all of the uproar was, gee, Lin-Manuel Miranda, gee, Mark Hamill,
yeah,
gee, other random celebrities, you could have been tweeting about this show every single week. We wouldn't have had to go through this thing.
That's true.
because it's not like Lin-Manuel Miranda live tweets Brooklyn Nine-Nine every week, and maybe if he did, it would make a difference.
Right.
But no, the show had very vocal fans and supporters in the media, and you know, I was among them and have been among them, but then there were the celebrities with these huge online presences who really pushed hard, and so Lin-Manuel Miranda and Mark Hamill are the two most obvious answers,
right.
But there were a bunch of people. Guillermo del Toro tweeted,
right,
about it.
Which is the strangest one. That's the one that I found the most endearing. Was I love that Guillermo del Toro watches Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I don't know why I find that so amusing.
I found it amusing too, because you know, we both follow him obviously on Twitter, and so he doesn't tweet about sort of in the moment things like that.
Yeah.
He doesn't tweet about the TV shows he's watching in the moment. He tweets about the big movies that he's seen with the auteurs who he respects and all of that.
Right.
And then suddenly he comes out with this tweet about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm like, sure, good, excellent. Why not? You know. So let's get a musical episode next season directed by Guillermo del Toro and guest starring Lin-Manuel Miranda. Why not?
There you go. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and for Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans, it was a bit of a roller coaster for 30 hours, but it's back. NBC picked it up, and we're all very happy about that. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about a bunch of TV, all the other shows that got the axe, and we'll preview some of the stuff that Dan has seen trailer-wise for the new seasons coming up in the fall. But right now, we got a break for the news, and that's coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, it's Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. That's one artist, three songs. Get them in now at 312-981-7200. That's also talk and text, 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio right here on Michigan Avenue. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and my main man, the great Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. We are going to be talking about how good of a student we all were or weren't, and then share some stories about celebrities who were not, like people who were very successful but did terribly in school. And that's all coming up right here. But right now, we're talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right, let's talk about the trailers for the networks that you have seen. Let's talk about, you know what, I'm sorry. Let's talk about the shows that got axed. And what is this time period? What do they call this time period where shows get reevaluated and axed?
This is the upfront time period, and so that is what this week has been, is each network presenting its upcoming schedule to advertisers, and so upfronts is technically an advertiser-driven period,
mm-hmm.
And yet media types like me watch the presentations and listen to all of the data babble about who was number one in which various demographics and how you split the atom into its smallest pieces so that everybody is number one in something,
right.
So this is the upfronts period, and the week before upfronts is sort of the hell week in which everything goes crazy, mm-hmm. and things get killed and things
right.
get saved at the last minute, et cetera.
Okay, so we'll get to the upfront stuff, the previews that you've seen in a little bit. So what are the casualties? And it was a bloodbath, correct?
It really wasn't more of a bloodbath than usual. Just I think each year we kind of our hides thicken, and then it hurts more when things happen. Like, you know, with Fox, they canceled large amounts of things, and Fox is just in this weird position.
Right.
So Fox basically canceling all of its comedies, that was unexpected, and that was different. And I would love for Last Man on Earth to get a chance to end on its own terms, whatever its terms happen to be, because where the show left, he is on a cliffhanger that's a little bit frustrating.
Yep.
And I guess technically the Mick ended on a cliffhanger.
It did. Yes.
I don't know that I took that cliffhanger very seriously, and I suspect that they were going to just erase it the next episode anyway. But still, it got canceled, and that hurts a tiny bit. Lots of people, again, on Twitter, so you never know whether that's just 15 really, really loud people or whether it's representative of millions of frustrated people who just aren't being measured by Nielsen. Lucifer was canceled, and a lot of people felt unhappy about that. Timeless still has not been renewed or canceled. And so it's in a weird limbo that makes people uncomfortable. And since I follow a lot of the people who work on the show on Twitter, people like Sean Ryan are begging people to watch live. And so that's in flux. I'm trying to think what else. What That You Love was canceled in the past week. I don't know that I lost that many things I care deeply about.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, it was the three Fox comedies. Those were the ones that stood out for me. Everything else, I could kind of see as being canceled. I've never seen an episode of Timeless. I find it really intriguing, and I think the idea is really intriguing, and I like the lead. I think she's great. But I've never seen it. I don't know why I've never seen it.
It's a decent show. Some people seem to really love it. I don't love it. I think it is a show that does some interesting things with the time travel conceit. It has a decent cast. Abigail Spencer is entirely charming and likable, and a lot of the supporting cast is. And it is also a show that ended on a second season on a cliffhanger that really did make me want to see where the show was going to go, and we'll see. I am assuming or hoping that NBC will find a way to pick it up for some small window. Speaking of Abigail Spencer, and therefore speaking of Rectify, one of the biggest dramas of last week was Clayne Crawford being fired off of Lethal Weapon, and Lethal Weapon not exactly recasting him, but casting a new basically Riggs, but his brother possibly, Sean William Scott. That was a surprise.
Can you, Dan, give people who might not know what happened there? It's a pretty crazy story.
It's an absurd story. Basically, it involves multiple different complaints against Clayne Crawford for behavior on set and treatment of people on set, including apparently very tense situations with his co-star Damon Wayans in an episode he shot in which it appears that Damon Wayans got shrapnel in the back of his head, which is obviously not very good. And Clayne Crawford's pitch has been that basically he's a perfectionist, and so he was, you know, whatever temper tantrums he threw were in the name of the entire production and getting things right and people not living up to his standards or whatever. But it was such an unusual situation because shows don't usually recast their fire and then recast their leading men. That doesn't happen all that often.
Right.
But everything was going on with subtweeting on Twitter, and, you know, Clayne Crawford went away on a vacation and sort of popped up on the day he was fired, like, you can't fire me on Twitter. And Damon Wayans started retweeting people who were speculating, oh no, what's going to happen to Lethal Weapon? Is it going to die? And then he tweeted a video of the injury with the shrapnel, and then he made his Twitter feed private only. At all sorts of bizarre things for a TV show that does okay ratings.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a bomb for Fox, but it's also not a huge hit. It's a performer. It does stuff, and so very odd that all played out.
Right. Yeah. And then Sean William Scott gets the gig, and he's you said that he's going to play Riggs's brother.
I believe that's what they're saying. The story goes that he was offered the part 2 years ago and turned it down for whatever reason, and that my colleagues at Hollywood Reporter reported that offers this time around to either take the Riggs part or to take a tangential, basically new white cop lead. Offers went out to Johnny Knoxville, Carl Urban, and then they came back around to Sean William Scott. So it's very... I don't... You know, if this were a great show, that would be one thing. If this were a huge hit, that would be one thing. this is for a meh show, you know, and a meh show in which the thing I enjoyed most about it really was Clayne Crawford. And so I'm not really sure. I will check back in on it because it's my job.
Right.
But otherwise, I don't know that I would.
Yeah. Are there any other notable cancellations that stand out?
The thing is, they're all notable to someone. Most of the things that I hoped were going to come back got brought back. Fresh Off the Boat got brought back. Speechless got brought back, even though they're both being moved to Friday nights, which is always dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's excited that Last Man Standing got brought back. Maybe not everybody, but certain people certainly are. So,
right.
But look, people are. And the thing I keep saying about this is, yes, it speaks badly for Fox in terms of artistic aspiration. Basically, they picked up a show to chase the Roseanne audience. That's all it is. It's a show that was never any good, whatever. On the other hand, that show is absolutely going to draw a bigger audience than Brooklyn Nine-Nine is. Mm-hmm. It just is. And so you've got those two sides of the coin, and I can see both of them, and the critic in me is disappointed, but the pragmatist in me understands the way this all goes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, let's talk about some of the stuff that you've seen for upfronts here and the trailers. Let's start with ABC. ABC, what have you seen trailer-wise, and what looks good to you or what looks interesting?
Well, everything at ABC, to ABC's credit, everything looks a lot like an ABC show, and you can't say that for everybody. You look at the Fox things they picked up, and again, Fox is in flux, so who knows what it looks like, whereas ABC has, they've got a new show starring Nathan Fillion, and a new show with Nathan Fillion as a guy who's in over his head working with the police department. It's basically Castle, except he's actually going to be a cop. It's about a guy whose life falls apart, and he joins the LAPD, and so it's Nathan Fillion doing his snarky thing, and it looks like it might be okay. I can maybe get behind it. I don't know that it's going to become the best show on TV, but people like Nathan Fillion, so
yeah.
That's a thing.
Who's behind that creatively?
Not Noah Hawley. Lexi Hawley, who is, I believe, Noah Hawley's brother, behind it, and he's worked on a bunch of procedurals. He worked on Bones. I think he might have worked on Castle. So he's a productive and prolific TV procedural writer.
Got it.
And I think it has potential, but again, it's not going to be an Emmy show. It's just, is it going to be a likable procedural an hour a week? I think it could. Let's see. Jimmy Kimmel always makes fun of ABC for about 10 minutes each upfront. It's usually the best part of the presentation. And he rather relentlessly made fun of the title of the romantic action comedy Whiskey Cavalier, which is a strange title. And some people seem to like it. I think it's silly. But basically, it's sort of bickering and flirting CIA agents played by Scott Foley and by Lauren Cohen from Walking Dead. And it looks like, again, it looks like an ABC show. It looks like people will flirt. It looks like occasionally the dialogue will be quippy and fun. It's from David Henninson, who's done a lot of comedy stuff and who also did one of the incarnations of The Catch on ABC, the Shonda Rhimes produced show that never really found its footing. But it looked like it was trying to be a show like this. So I can see how I would want to watch Lauren Cohan be a badass once a week. That could be fun.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else is there? There's a Goldberg spinoff, if that's the kind of thing that anyone's interested in, set in the 90s. Same school, about the gym teacher, starring Tim Meadows, though. So we've talked about our love for Tim Meadows.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
That could be a thing.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on, because we have to take a break. We'll come back.
So many shows, Nick. So many shows.
I know. No, let's take a break, get that out of the way, and come back and talk more. Dan, hang on.
Yeah.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Lots of new shows to talk about, and Dan has an opinion on the trailers that he's watched during upfronts. We'll take a quick break, and we come back, more talk with Dan Feinberg right here on WGN.
All right.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are talking with Dan Feinberg, who is a critic, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And lots more stuff to talk about. Let's get Dan back in here. Okay, Dan, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
All right. So we were talking about ABC's new shows that they've been pumping up for advertisers. What else was there on ABC that you wanted to get to? Anything?
What else was there? Let's see. There's Grand Hotel, which is a kind of upstairs, downstairs show about a upper-class Miami Hotel, which stars Demian Bashir, and he's always interesting and worth watching. I can get behind that. If you missed the Catholic big family comedy Real O'Neill's, there's another Catholic big family comedy, this one set in the 70s, because so many of ABC's comedies are set in different decades.
Yeah.
And this one is called The Kids Are All Right, not to be confused with the movie of the same title, but it stars Michael Cudlitz, also from The Walking Dead. Apparently, that's where ABC was getting its actors from this pilot season. And it looks okay. It looks like an ABC family comedy, and a lot of ABC's family comedies are really good. And so, yeah, they have a lot of stuff, and I would guess probably of these, a couple of them will be decent.
Okay.
But at least they all kind of fit with the ABC brand.
All right. All right, what about NBC? You see some stuff there that's interesting?
I would say less so. And I would be genuinely concerned about NBC if I worked at NBC, which I don't. The thing at NBC that looked clearly the best to me was Abby's, which is another Mike Schur-produced comedy. Mike Schur is the co-creator of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Here he's just an executive producer. But the gimmick is basically, it's about a woman who starts an illegal bar in the backyard of the house that she rents. And so the show is going to be shot outdoors in front of a studio audience, which is not something you see very often.
No.
And it stars Natalie Morales, who people will know from being wonderfully sarcastic on everything from The Middleman to Parks and Recreation to other things. She's really a terrific character comic actress who has been due, I would say, for her own spotlight, and she's the star, and Neil Flynn from Scrubs Middle is in it, a couple other recognizable people. That one looks decent. Otherwise, NBC has a lot of shows that look a lot like shows that they've canceled before, so there's a kind of a plane goes missing, and it reappears 5 years later and no time has passed for the people on the plane, that kind of sort of high concept show, which you'd expect to get canceled after 12 episodes on ABC. So
yeah.
It'll just get canceled after 10 episodes on NBC instead. There's that. There's The Enemy Within, which is basically The Blacklist with the genders reversed. So it's Morris Chestnut as a CIA or FBI agent trying to stop a terrorist activity with the help of America's greatest ever traitor, played by Jennifer Carpenter, who I generally like, but I like when she has the ability to swear, which she won't on NBC. There's New Amsterdam, which is not to be confused with the Fox show New Amsterdam that starred Nikolai Coster-Waldau about a decade ago. It's about a hospital, and it looks like every medical show you've ever seen. I can't say I'm hugely excited about that. And then there's The Village, which looks like NBC's first real attempt to do a This Is Us-style, basically grown-up tearjerker, and it's about the residents of a apartment complex in Brooklyn, and it's got a decent cast, but it also has a name that sounds a lot like an M. Night Shyamalan movie. But the trailer featured a lot of sentimental music and a three-legged dog. It's going to make you see you're crying already.
Who's in the cast?
The cast features such notable people as the ostensible sort of star or point of entry character is Warren Christie, who was in sci-fi's Alphas and a couple other things. There are a bunch of very familiar character actors. There's Frankie Faison from The Wire. There's Uncle Junior from The Sopranos. Oh. There's Lorraine Toussaint, who was fantastic in the second or third season of Orange is the New Black. So it's a kind of mixed cast of young, pretty people and veteran old character actors. It looks like it could either be good or it could make me angry in a hurry. And I'm not going to decide that based just on the trailer.
Got it. Okay. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
Hold on a second. Dan Feinberg is with us. Lots of new shows that we're talking about here. We'll talk more TV here. And you can follow Dan on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he writes for The Hollywood Reporter. We're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up next. And then afterwards, we'll talk more with Dan Feinberg here on a Thursday morning on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, the Showcase studio right here on Michigan Avenue. It's Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We're going to be talking about how well you did in school, how good a student you were, and then there's some stories that I have about some celebrities who became very successful despite the fact that they were awful or terrible students. And that's all coming up right here on WGN. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he has joined us to talk TV. And there's a lot to talk about. Let's get Dan back in here. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Have you seen trailers for CBS's stuff?
I have, and because it's 2018, CBS's biggest trailers were for such hip modern titles as Magnum P.I. Oh. and Murphy Brown.
Oh, my God. It just doesn't end, does it, Dan?
On the other hand, they didn't pick up their Khaki and Lacy pilot, so, and that is a thing that actually existed.
Oh, man.
So, you know, this is showing relative restraint. I'm a little disappointed that they didn't pick up their L.A. Confidential pilot, which I had high hopes for, and that featured Walton Goggins as Jack Vincennes, and that to me seemed like such good casting, I didn't care about anything else. Maybe CBS cared about other things, but yeah, so lots of trailers, and it did start with a... Not exactly. They haven't shot a pilot for Murphy Brown because they want it to be current. And so all they did was a what happened to all the characters from Murphy Brown after they all left FYI and what brought them back? And the answer to what brought them back, not surprisingly, is Donald Trump. So, yeah, I'm really not sure what to do with Murphy Brown. I think it's the kind of show that could have a perspective on today's situation, and it could be interesting, but all of the things they've done to bring in new characters and stuff, there's an Indian tech guy who makes fun of the old guys for not knowing how to use social media and for still having AOL addresses. It just feels so lame and CBS-y to me that I don't know what to do with it. But, you know, it could be good. Magnum P.I. is... It's Magnum P.I., except now he's played by Jay Hernandez and he doesn't have a mustache.
Uh-oh.
So, exactly, see, controversy. He does not have a mustache. He does not have conspicuous chest hair. So how is he Magnum? I have no answer. Also, Higgins is now a woman, and she's sexy, and she also kicks butt. So, you know, whatever. And the pilot was shot in Hawaii, and it looks really lovely. It was directed by Justin Lin, who does very good, exciting things when he directs pilots. So it looks like it's probably going to be fun. Basically, it looks a lot like a companion season to Hawaii Five-0.
Right.
And so if that makes people happy, yay. Let's see, what else was there? There's The Neighborhood, which has a really good cast. It has Cedric the Entertainer is the star. They just added Max Greenfield from New Girl. They have Dreama Walker from Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. They have Tashina Arnold from Survivor's Remorse. So it's a great cast. The premise is basically a white family moves into an upper-middle-class African-American neighborhood in Los Angeles. Culture clashes ensue.
Ah.
So it's, you know, you can kind of imagine what that show would be. Yeah. And based on the trailer, that's exactly what it is. what else does CBS have? They have a Dick Wolf-produced procedural, FBI procedural, that's and hold back if on your excitement on the title. The title of that FBI procedural from Dick Wolf is FBI.
Oh, wow. And they're not shooting it here? What the hell?
They, look, this is on CBS.
Right, right.
He shoots in Chicago for NBC.
Right, right.
CBS, he's going to New York.
Okay.
So it looks like a CBS show. CBS and stuff looks like it's all down the middle CBS-y, and probably it's not being made for me, and that's okay.
Okay. All right. Well, there's just some of the stuff to look forward to, and you know, as it gets closer to the fall season, you'll see actual episodes of it. This is just you talking about the impressions that you have from the trailers.
Yeah, this is entirely half-cocked. This has nothing to do with anything. This is just trailers, gut reactions. Who knows? Maybe things will be surprisingly awesome. In all likelihood, things will be surprisingly less awesome.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the TV version of Little Women, which stars Angela Lansbury, and it is a masterpiece adaptation.
It is indeed. It premiered last Sunday, and it's from the creator of Call the Midwife, which is a very popular and well received PBS and British enterprise, and basically it's the Louisa May Alcott book over 3 hours, and there are, I would say, few truly compelling reasons to watch it, but there are decent reasons, and probably the primary reason to watch it is Angela Bassett plays Aunt March, and it is impressive to be reminded of what a powerhouse Angela Bassett, Angela Lansbury.
Angela Bassett's a powerhouse in her own right as well.
No, but let me tell you how courageous the casting of Angela Bassett as Angela would be. I mean, people's heads would explode. Whereas Angela Lansbury makes a lot more sense, but is also still very impressive and a powerhouse in her own way. Angela Bassett is not 92 years old,
right.
Angela Lansbury is, but is still very impressive for her age. And
how is Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter?
Let's see. How would I describe this?
Okay.
She is good for this purpose because she doesn't feel like an actress, and she's sort of accentuating the uncomfortable, not really part of this world characteristic that Joe has in Little Women. And so for this, she seems very, very correct. I would think that probably there would be plenty of things that you could cast her in where I would go, gee, I really would like someone who's a little bit more studied as an actress, whatever. I think she's well cast here. Her resemblance to her parents is almost shot for shot. She looks more like one, more like the other. She probably looks more like Uma. But you can tell who her parents are rather easily. She's decent. Of the other girls, Catherine Newton, who was in almost everything last year. She was in Lady Bird. She was in Three Billboards. She was in Big Little Lies. She was popping up left and right. She plays Amy here. I think she's very good. Amy is a tough character to play for people who know the material.
Yeah.
Who else is in it? You have Emily Watson as Marmee, Dylan Baker as father. Michael Gambon pops up regally in a couple scenes. It's not essential, but that doesn't mean it isn't still warm and classic, and it works on Little Women-y levels. It will make you cry.
Okay. It sounds really, I'm very interested in it. It sounds really good. Boy, the cast is amazing.
It's, you know, it's good material. They're good characters.
Yeah.
Say what you will about a lot of classic literature, it translates well, and these are good characters, and good characters who have been played by great actresses over the years, and this is indeed a very fine cast.
Okay. You know, your IndieWire contributions are always very entertaining, Dan, and we talked about this as a topic just this past Monday morning. We did the best, most memorable movie moms and TV moms, and you were asked about the best moms on TV.
And I think I went through my normal laundry list, but really the answers came down to three moms from FX who we talk about all the time. So So the first one I mentioned was Elizabeth Jennings from The Americans, who's probably a truly horrible mom. and that's because she's in the process of, you know, attempting to undermine the U.S. government and spy for the Russians, and she can't be bothered to remember what sport her son plays, and she's trying to turn her daughter into a spy, so maybe not such a good mom. Whereas certainly Sam Fox from Better Things, the Pamela Adlon character, is a wonderful mom in her own quirky, occasionally flawed way.
Right.
And knows how to choreograph a glorious graduation dance. And I would say our favorite moms on TV, and I hope when you guys discussed it, you remembered to discuss Christine Baskett and Louie Anderson.
Of course, from Baskett. Yeah, that Christine Baskett is, I think, currently the best movie mom, or TV mom. So,
whether or not she's a good mom is something else, but she tries hard and she means relatively well.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the finale of New Girl?
I did. I didn't love it. I thought a lot of this last season was just fan service, because Fox was nice enough to give them the last season, so they kind of did all sorts of little nods to things, and the finale was particularly nod heavy. Like, in the last 15 minutes, they got in 20 cameos from people,
right?
Just cause. But it was good enough, I would say. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I mean, I was a regular watcher of the show, and then I was sporadic, and then I started watching sporadically. But I wanted to make sure that I saw the finale, because that show did provide me with a lot of really pretty quality laughs and entertainment over the years, and I really think the cast is very likable, and I love the direction that show, like other shows, it starts out one thing and then it becomes an ensemble driven thing, because it started out, let's see how quirky Zooey Deschanel can be week by week, and then it turned into a really great cast and focusing on an ensemble, and I like that it went that direction, and I thought the finale was, you know, it wasn't great, but it was good, and I was satisfied with it.
But I'm always happier when creators are given the opportunity to take shows where they want to go. That will always be my preference over an abrupt and unplanned ending like Last Man on Earth.
Right.
So the fact that Liz Merriweather got to take the show to its place, and she got to give people happy endings, and she got to, you know, layer on the schmaltz at the end, that she earned it. She did enough good work for Fox that she should have gotten to end it how she wanted to, and I'm happy that she did.
Yeah. Overall, though, I will always remember New Girl as a pretty solid show, and one that I really enjoyed for a pretty good period of time.
And, well, you know, those actors are all going to get, several of them already have parts. I mentioned Max Greenfield has a sitcom on CBS.
Yeah.
Damon Wayans Jr., if you happen to still consider him a New Girl cast member, which he kind of is, he also has a new CBS sitcom, so...
Yeah,
they're all going to work a lot.
And Jake Johnson, obviously, is, you know, his film career is pretty going right. I mean, he's in that film Tag, which is coming out a little bit later this year, so he's going to do fine. So
I feel like probably they're all going to be fine, though a little disappointed that Hannah Simone's Greatest American Hero remake, which was at ABC, didn't go forward. A minor disappointment.
Okay. Before we let you go, are you watching the uproariously joyous Handmaid's Tale?
Yes.
Good
yes,
Lord.
I am. Darker every week. But I have an are you watching for you.
Okay.
Are you watching Killing Eve?
No, I'm not. And the actress who played, the actress who was not Sandra Oh, was on with Seth Meyers. And it looks really incredibly intriguing. This is BBC America, correct?
This is BBC America, and we haven't talked about it before, because you're not watching it.
Well, I'll watch it.
Watch it. Look, every once in a while I give you guarantees. I feel like I feel reasonably safe on this one. You are going to like Killing Eve.
Okay, I will watch it. I will catch up with it on BBC America on demand, and I will catch up and I will watch it. And the next time we meet, Dan, I will tell you what I think of it.
I'm looking forward to it. It is. Fun, funny, dark, screwed up. It's a really good show.
Well, the interview that who's the actress who's in it?
Jodie Comer.
Okay, she
and Sandra Oh is the other,
right?
The actress.
They showed a really weird and funny clip from it, and you know, and she was very enthusiastic about it, and And Seth Meyers lost his mind over it. Like, he apparently, like, loves the show and is obsessed with it. So that sold me on it. I had seen, you know, ads for it and things like that, but I never really was urged to watch it. But now, after what you say and what I saw on Seth's show the other night, I will definitely watch it.
The fact that we have this show and Barry on at the same time, because they're both hitman shows, or hitwoman in the case of Killing Eve,
right,
shows it's just a good snapshot of how two completely different perspectives on a very common, very familiar genre, how they can be fresh and new for 2018.
All right, great. Dan, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Sounds good, Nick.
All right, cool. Take care. There's Dan Feinberg. He's the best. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about what kind of a student were you? Were you a good student? And we are also going to talk about how the best strategy for guessing on a multiple choice quiz. That's going to kick off our education talk when we come back on WGN.